Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Good Saturday morning to you. Hard to believe it's the 4th of October and 72 degrees on our way to almost 91. Nice to have you with us on our Smart Garden Show. Let us say hello to Mary Meyer from the U of M. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. The gardening just continues. There is no end to it this summer.
And maybe I removed my tomato plant too late. I should have left it alone for a while. It was sure great to see you the other day. Mary and I were attending, and I had the pleasure to be invited to the farm at the Arboretum for a kind of a salute, a big salute to retiring Julie Weisenhorn. That was a fun day.
Oh, wasn't it fun? A beautiful weather, just wonderful setting up there at the farm at the Arb, decorated with pumpkins and scarecrows for the fall, but a wonderful thank you to Julie for her many years. And she's still going to be on the show here.
Yes,
that'll be great.
I'm glad you brought that up. She's definitely going to be there, and the good folks there will probably see Julie around the Arboretum from time to time as well, I'm sure.
Yes.
But it was a fun time. Like you said, great weather. So salute to Julie, who, again, like Mary said, will still be on the show. We're glad to hear that. If you have any, and they're already coming in, any kind of a lawn or garden question for Mary, call it in or text it in, as usual, 651-461-9226. As you probably did, Mary, and you probably get from time to time, boy, there's a lot of listeners of this show. I mean, within that community.
Lots of listeners, and for those people who don't like to get up early, you can listen to the podcast anytime.
That's right.
If you miss one. So put it on when you're gardening.
Absolutely. Well, already we're getting calls, and already we're getting texts. Maybe that's not that unusual. Before we even move on, let's grab a phone call so we don't keep people waiting. Jim's calling in from St. Francis this morning. Thank you, Jim. Good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Yeah, good morning. My question is regarding asparagus plants. I've got about a 2 foot wide row, about 25 feet long, and portion of that length, my adult plants are starting to have a slate brown tan color to some of the foliage, and I'm curious about that, and I wonder if I fertilized it now, would that benefit anything?
Jim, I don't think I would do fertilizer now. It could be just the natural dying of the plants because the time we are with the shorter day length and the end of the season. If I were you, I would fertilize the asparagus in the spring rather than now. It really is going into a decline, and you don't want to really stimulate growth this late in the year. Another thing you might want to do is have a soil test done for the soil around your asparagus to see what the nutrient levels are. And then I would consider also thinking about watering it. You know, water is a big issue now. Again, you know, we went out of the drought conditions, but now with the heat and this unusual hot weather and not enough rain now, there are some areas of the state that are back in drought conditions again. So I would think about watering it now and maybe get a soil test and fertilize in the spring.
Very good. Again, 651-461-9226. Tell you what, let me grab a text and then we'll get back to the phones. Texter says, my amaryllis has been on a pot outside all summer in a pot. It has 8 leaves, one almost 3 feet long. I think those leaves should die so it can get ready to bloom again. What should I do is their question.
Many people can actually keep an amaryllis if you have great growing conditions for it in the summer. Sounds like this plant, this person does. Yes. It doesn't have to have a dormant period, but most people give it a dormant period. With the weather conditions, I think I'd probably wait another week or two to actually put it in a dark, cooler location where the top will die back. And then usually 6 weeks before you want to see the blooms, you can bring it from the dormant location, start watering it, and then usually the flowers come first before the foliage. So if it's been growing in a good location, about the middle of October, I would think about putting it in a dormant place.
Very good. Let's take a phone call. Tony, checking in from Minneapolis this morning. Tony, what is your question for Mary this morning?
Yeah, good morning. I would love to attract cedar waxwings, and I think I'd like a shorter sort of plant, not a really tall thing. What do you recommend?
Oh, so something with the berries, Tony. So maybe one of the viburnums. Those are several native plants. They're also dogwoods that have a lot of berries. My first suggestion was going to be crab apples because that's where I have seen cedar wax rings is on crab apples, but that's not a short plant, so can't go with that one. But I would say pretty much any of the shrubs that have berries, so the chokeberries, some of the native viburnums or dogwoods, I would recommend. And then I would actually look that up. You know, Cornell Ornithology has their Merlin app, and that Cornell Ornithology is known for their bird recommendations. So if there are specific plants for cedar waxwings, you could find that by looking online. And Cornell Ornithology has a great deal of information. But cedar waxwings are certainly beautiful. They come in flocks, and it's fabulous to see them.
All right. Texter says this, if I aerate my lawn, do I need to dethatch as well? That's the first question. Is it too late to dethatch and or aerate? I was thinking about dethatching first and then aerating.
Well, aerating is certainly of those two, I would suggest aeration. Not all lawns need to be dethatched. If you have an old, really dense lawn and it's really hard to find the soil or where the soil starts and the grasses end, then you could consider dethatching. But I would say if you've only got one thing to do, I would do the aeration.
Yeah, this is a good time of year for that, isn't it?
Fall. You still can. You know, I'm wondering when we're going to move back our lawn seeding. We've always had August 15th to September 15th, but now it seems like, gosh, should we push that out to October 1st?
Yeah.
Because
things
the weather changes.
Yeah, they are changing. I'm going to leave you with a question before we take a break. And a texter, they hear us talk about dormant seeding all the time. And their question is, how do I do dormant seeding? Let's attack that when we come back.
Sure.
After the break. This is our Smart Garden Show on this Saturday morning, the 4th of October, believe it or not. We are heading for almost 91 today, a breezy weekend, gusting to around 35 miles an hour. I can tell you the current temp, 72 degrees. From News Talk A3 of WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota Extension, and answering a whole lot of questions, which is not unusual for this show. I guess Mary knows that. We get a lot of questions, both by phone or by text. And speaking of which, if you'd like to call and chat with Mary, great. 651-461-9226. All right, before the break, how do I do dormant seeding? What is that procedure, Mary?
Well, dormant seeding is putting down grass seed for your lawn area where you don't expect it to germinate right away. So this is really when conditions are cold enough that things aren't growing. And the so usually November, we think mid-November is the time to do this, and before the ground is covered with snow. So you want the seed to have good contact with the soil, but and then if snow comes and covers it up, that's just fine. And the seed works its way down into the soil so that as when conditions are good in the spring, you'll get a head start on germination. So it is a great practice. It's recommended more and more, and it's very successful. So we have lots of detailed information on how to do it on the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. So you can read in detail about how to do it, but you want to buy, of course, good quality seed and seed for the site you have sunnier shade. And then wait till conditions are cold, and then you can put the seed down. And it's great if you put on some type of a germination blanket or a mulch on top of it, so the seed, especially on a slope, doesn't move.
Yeah, it doesn't slide off, yeah. Is it too late to plant garlic, a listener wants to know?
Probably not. Garlic is a plant that we do put in the fall, and I have planted it, gosh, I think in October before, and it is October now. But yes, you plant it in the fall, it establishes itself, it grows through the spring, and then it's kind of midsummer when you end up harvesting it. So I would go ahead and put it in now, yeah.
How do you do that? I've never done that. I'd like to try that.
Yeah, so well, you take, I guess you could do it from the grocery store. I have not done that, but there are kinds at a garden center is where you buy the bulbs.
Okay.
And you separate it just in the cloves or the small pieces of the bulb, and you plant those. And you might see it grow a little bit this fall. It does really well with establishing its roots in the fall. And then in the spring, it grows kind of looking like an onion. And about, I don't know, it's usually mid-July or so, early August, the tops will start to die back. And then, yeah, once it's dying back, you can pull it out, and there will be a bulb there with multiple cloves. Yeah.
Oh, Bob, I'm going to try that this year. And it's still summer, so I can do that.
Yeah.
Let's grab a phone call, Mary. Jerry is calling in from Matamidi this morning. Thank you, Jerry. What is your question?
Hey, good morning, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for all your advice on things. I have two birch trees that I've had in my front yard for the entire time I've been there. I would say they're the trunks at the base are probably like an 18-inch in diameter. They're just beautiful trees, 40 to 50 feet high. I water them a lot. I think that helps. And I'm wondering about trimming them. People tell me wait till the winter months.
Yes, so winter months is right, Jerry, as far as the pruning goes. You want the plant to be pretty much totally dormant when you're doing the pruning. And you're right, birch does like water. They tend to like cooler conditions. And so the hot, sunny, totally open lawn areas sometimes are stressful for them, but giving them additional water will really help. So yeah, I would wait to do the pruning till the leaves are off the trees and they're completely dormant.
Okay. Texter says, do I need to remove the crabgrass from my lawn before fertilizing?
Well, that darn crabgrass. So this is an annual, and it's probably already shed its seeds now. This is kind of tough because what you're removing is really almost totally dead plant. And the plant is going to die because it's an annual, but the seeds probably already shed there. I would just say on the fertilizer, because of the dry conditions, unless you have an irrigation system or are planning to water it, I wouldn't put the fertilizer down till we get cooler conditions and more rainfall. And then we get to the point where it's almost too late to fertilize. And so you got maybe a couple more weeks when you could fertilize, but then it really gets to the point where things will shut down. So fertilize if you can water.
Looking at that forecast, speaking of watering, and outside of maybe tomorrow, 20% chance, mostly clear the rest of the week, two chances of a very small chance of rain. So it looks like another dry week. So that's probably good advice. Dolores calling in from Northfield this morning with a question. Good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Yes. I have a problem with moss growing on the side, part of my lawn. It's sort of like on the north side of this big pine tree. What can I do to get rid of it?
Yes. So, Dolores, the conditions you described, the site you described sounds perfect for moss. On the north side, it's shady, might be cooler, low nutrients there, maybe dry because it's under the pine tree, but not many plants like those kinds of conditions. So I have to tell you, there are some people who covet moss and try to get to grow it because it is attractive to some people. You can rake it up and try to remove it. And then I think the only way you could really get rid of it is if you put something else there. If you try to grow another ground cover there, you might be able to eliminate it if you put on a mulch like bark chips, wood chips, something like that could cover up the area and deter the moss. But I would consider a ground cover, some of these like lamium or vinca that can grow in really dry, shady conditions that might outcompete the moss as well. So you can always get a lot of ideas for ground covers on our extension.umn.edu website.
Mary, before we have a look at that CCO forecast, let's grab another call. Rod checking in from Lakeville this morning. Thanks, Rod. What is your question for Mary?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding hostas and slugs. We've had problems with those, and we have a lot of different types of hostas, and it's the thin leaf ones that the slugs seem to go after. But my question is this. I used Sluggo this last year. It seems to have helped. And the question is, this fall, should I cut back the hostas or should I leave them? I've heard that it's good to leave it for the nutrition in the soil. I've also heard get rid of it so it's not an environment for the slugs. Which one should I do?
I usually leave my hosta foliage there, especially if it's green, because it continues to provide food for the plants. So I don't clean up my hostas in the fall. It's maybe true that you can reduce your slugs by cleaning up your hosta, but boy, you know, they like anything moist. So if you have a mulch, they're really living in that mulch more than they are living in the foliage that's up above. You have stated a couple things about slug management with hosta, because not all varieties of hosta do slugs like. Yes, the big tough leaves they don't like. It's the thin, more pliable ones that slugs favor. So anything you can do to reduce the environment that slugs like is helpful. But unfortunately, they love the same environment that hosta do. So that it really is a challenge with slugs.
Very good. Mary, let's take a break. Have a look at that, at least for a while, warm forecast, then a cooling off. And then we have about another half hour of the Smart Garden Show to go. So call us or text us, 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show this Saturday morning. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the U of M. You know, Mary, you and I had a fun time with a bunch of folks saluting Julie Weisenhorn, her retirement at the Farm of the Arb. Beautiful day. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Arboretum. I took my wife there for a spin on that three-mile drive here a week or so ago. What a great thing to do. But walking is even better.
The Arboretum in the fall. This is a popular spot, Denny. The new this fall, we have opened up a second entrance. So you could always go, of course, in the main entrance. But for the very popular fall weekends that we have now, you can also enter at the farm at the Arb. So that is just, if you're at the intersection of 5 and 41, you just go a little ways south on 41, take the right on 82nd Street, and you'll come to the farm at the Arb entrance. And there's a shuttle going from the main entrance to the farm for these busy weekends. But if you want to see pumpkins, if you want to see squash, if you want to see scarecrows, the Arboretum is the place to go. And this weekend is the harvest sale with the auxiliary, the book sale from the library, and of course the Apple House is open with First Kiss and Sweet Tango and many experimental apples. You can try them, you can buy them. Just a really fun place to see, and hundreds of pumpkins and squash have been harvested. You can see the big displays throughout the Arboretum, and you can buy some up at the Apple House.
Oh yeah. Got to visit that this week, I think. Pick up some Sweet Tango. I tell you what, let's do. Yeah, that's such a great. Get out. Again, for folks that maybe are unfamiliar, if they want to get out there, first of all, is it good to get online first?
Yes, we still do have a reservation system with tickets ahead of time. And unless you're a member, you really need to get a ticket ahead of time. On the weekends, everyone needs to sign up for an entry time. But I looked this morning and all the times are open. The days ahead are open. So fall color. That's what we're talking about, walking at the Arboretum, and there's some beautiful fall color there.
And bring the kids. They'll love
it.
Yes. For sure.
Yeah.
Let's take a phone call, Mary. Diane has been waiting there in St. Paul to ask you a question. Thank you, Diane. What is your question?
Good morning. I've raised butternut squash this year, and I have probably 8 or 9, but several of them have had bites put in them by squirrels, and they've broken the skin. It happened weeks and weeks ago, so the squash didn't spoil, but I'm wondering, can I pare those bite areas away and still cook and use my squash?
Yes, you can, Diane, and I have had that happen sometimes even with zucchinis. But the winter squash, because they get that tough rind on them, they usually will heal over. So the storage is really important for winter squash. They like a curing, like a day like today. Put them in a porch or someplace. Doesn't have to be in the sun, but a warm temperatures for curing. Get those rinds hardened for a few days after you pick them, and then stored a little bit cooler, 60 degrees, 50, 60 degrees. And winter squash can last for 6 months. So congratulations, 8 or 9 ones for you. And, of course, butternut is a wonderful one to cook and bake with. Oh, and you know what? New this year, if you look at the Arboretum and you look at the Apple House, the recipes are up there. Squash recipes and apple recipes, and there are a lot of them, and they're Jenny Thulls, and Jenny is an excellent cook and wonderful ideas for what to do with squash and apples at the Arboretum website under the Apple House.
Oh, I love butternut squash.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Texter says this, Mary. My taller sedum has a blight or fungus similar to the lilacs that are nearby. Can that condition transfer from one plant to another? If so, I'll remove the lilac bushes I've had for years.
Well, usually that powdery mildew is specific to each plant. So each kind of powdery mildew is genetically goes with certain plants. So it isn't necessarily the same powdery mildew on your lilac. I would not cut down your lilac in hopes of removing the mildew on the sedum. But the thing is, they both like the same conditions, and the warm, humid nights, high moisture, and then genetically predisposed. Some plants just get mildew worse than others. If there's any way you can improve the air circulation, if your sedum is really crowded together, think about taking maybe one of the plants in the middle out so it has better airflow around it. Powdery mildew is not fatal. So plants live with that. They don't look very good, but they live with that. I would encourage you, as the plants decline and die, that you should remove the ones with powdery mildew, clean up the area, because sanitation can also help reduce powdery mildew.
Okay. Looking at a text, Mary, from a listener, it says, got an orchid. How often do I water it? If it's once a week, do I still water it even if it's still moist? Thank you for the show. What do you think about an orchid?
I got an orchid from Mother's Day from my daughters. Oh, my gosh. It was beautiful, Denny. It is still beautiful. It had blooms on it on Mother's Day, and it still has blooms on it. These wonderful moth or Phalaenopsis orchids are really a tremendous gift. I have been watering mine once a week. Usually I try to remember to do it on Sunday. And I take it to the sink, water it well, let it drain thoroughly, and then put it back in the pot. So once a week is pretty much a good rule of thumb. If it's still moist, probably I would wait. Maybe you don't need to water this one as often. Orchids grow in bark. You know, they're epiphytes. They don't really, they need a lot of air around their roots. So I would say once every week or 10 days for watering, and continue to give it good light. And you can fertilize orchids. That's how they will rebloom, if you give them a dilute fertilizer.
Listener wants to know, and I think I've seen one of these years ago. It almost looks like a soccer ball, 11 to 12 inch white round mushroom. What are those called?
Oh, my gosh. What is the name of that mushroom? I have seen those. I had a friend in our garden club. She invited the club over to look at her big snowball mushrooms. What the heck is the name of those? They are edible, although
they are.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. But I'm telling you, I have never eaten one. I will. The only mushroom I've eaten that I've picked has been a morel, and those are so delicious and characteristic. But otherwise, those giant puffballs, they are edible. They're incredible. They're pretty much a solid mushroom, and you cut them up and fry them and so on. But really, we have to be so careful in eating mushrooms, because there's so many poisonous ones, and you just have to be extremely careful eating them.
Oh, yes. But I remember seeing one years ago. It's amazing. I thought somebody left a soccer ball out.
Right, exactly. That's what they look like. Yeah, a lost soccer ball, right.
Texter says, first, thank you for this wonderful program. Thank you. I have, they say, a Christmas cactus that has never bloomed and is looking faded in color. I have it sitting in a southwest window. Any advice?
Yes. So Christmas cactus, like it cold or short days? So we're getting into short days now, but it sounds like your exposure is good. So it's gotten enough light, but I would consider that you put it in a room that's cool. And I mean cool, where like 60s, 50s, 60s, no warmer than that. Or you put it in a room that you don't turn the lights on at night, so it gets a natural day length with the windows. And it will bloom if it has those conditions. It also likes to be pot-bound and pretty much on the dry side. So small pots are good. And then, watering every 10 days or something. It doesn't need much water, but it's really cool temperatures or the short days. And short days is about 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, and then it will put the blooms on.
Okay. Dexter says, thanks for your show. My iris bed has been overrun again by Bishop's Gout or Snow in Summer or whatever that dreadful plant is called.
The gout weed.
I intend to dig everything up, replant irises in another clean bed, and then put cardboard and or black plastic to kill the invader. My question is, when is the best time to do this? Do I also cut the irises off 6 inches above the ground level?
Wow, now this listener, we have such smart listeners, Danny.
Oh, yeah.
This listener has figured it out. I mean, this is exactly what I would say. Get the iris out of there. Make sure you're not moving any of that goutweed root. Put them in a new location and then do your best to get rid of the goutweed in that area. Well, the ideal time for moving iris is like the first 2 weeks in August. But, you know, I would say at this point, I would do it now if I were you. I think I would do it now. Otherwise, you know, you might get a jump on getting rid of the gout weed. And the iris won't have much time. But given our weather conditions now, I think we're still going to have another 2 to 4 weeks of warm soil temperatures. So the iris could get a start. That is such a big problem with that gout weed. You can't always wait and do it next year because the ideal time is the end of August. Or I'm sorry, the end of July or early August.
I knew we'd get some reaction from a listener now. this listener believes the mushroom, and this may be true, you can tell me, is called Hen of the Woods. Is that ring a bell?
Oh, it might be. It might be. I don't know the mushrooms like I should. It's just so amazing because they all grow from organic matter in the soil. And if you use organic mulches, you get to see amazing mushrooms that will come up with moist conditions. That might be right. Hen of the Woods, is that what he said?
Yes, that's what they
say. So we could all Google that and see what comes up. Images.
Mary, another, I know we have to break here in a moment, but another listener wants to know, how long can potatoes be left in the ground?
Well, let's see. Let's say you're growing them this season. So you've got a while yet that you could dig them. The sooner the better, because of course they will start to get mushy, or insects could invade them or be a problem. So taking them out when the plants are full and mature and the tops are dying down is ideal. I would say you have a couple weeks. You could leave them in there, but then you really should get them out.
All right. Hang on, Mary. We'll take this bit of a break here. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show brought to us by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show on this Saturday morning, a warm one. We are on our way to maybe near 91 degrees here in the Twin Cities. 72 is the current temperature. Mary Myers with us from the U of M answering these questions this morning. Here's one more, Mary. How do I get rid of Japanese beetles in my raspberry patch?
Well, Japanese beetles love raspberries. It's one of their favorite plants to feed on. We have a lot of recommendations on our extension.umn.edu website. Hand picking them off first thing in the morning is one of the recommendations. We actually see Japanese beetles go in cycles where there will be a lot of beetles one year and then not so many the next year. They've actually reduced in number that I can see or that I've seen this year. We haven't had as many questions on them. They are not fatal. This is kind of things are winding down, although raspberries, many people are picking raspberries now with the fall berry crop. But they're just one of many issues, and they're usually not a fatal one. Anytime we think about spraying these with a crop like raspberries, that's not a good idea because, of course, you're harvesting at the same time. So chemical control at this time of year is usually not very good. So hand picking them off doesn't sound very good, but that's one of the control measures.
All right. Let's get another phone call in here. Ken checking in from Blaine. Ken, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
I have a couple of hibiscus plants. They're the tropical hibiscus that I got from a nursery reasonable. It was a clearance, and they're really quite large plants in pots. And what I would like to do is, I have them outside now and watering them a lot and so forth. And I'd like to bring them in the house when they need to be brought in the house. And I have parts of my house has large windows on a deck, and the windows face south. And I'd like to put them in that so they get the sunshine during the winter. Any ideas about that?
Ken, I think you've got a great plan. Yes, this is going to be good. These hibiscus need a great deal of sun. South window is wonderful. They are going to continue to grow, and they might even continue to bloom for you indoors if you give them a lot of sun. They do need quite a bit of water also, so I think you'll find that you're watering them quite a lot. They've got a lot of leaves, and those thin leaves, they can take up a lot of water. So, yes, it's a great plan. I've had hibiscus bloom through the winter, and it sounds like yours probably will too.
Listener sent this text, Mary. When should I dig up my calla lilies for winter? The leaves are still very green.
Yes, these tropicals are still growing, and just like dahlias, this time of year they are so beautiful and spectacular. They love this hot weather. I was thinking about that. Will we get a call? This very cold. Should I dig up my calla lilies or my cannas? So I would say not yet. You probably can leave them in. The tops can actually die on these tropicals with the first frost, and then you can take care of them and bring them inside for protection. So I would enjoy them for what probably will be another week or two.
Here's a candidate maybe for the website, the U of M website. My driveway, Texter says, is lined with summit ash trees. Of course, they're dying, need to be replaced. What type of tree would you recommend and what size? I was checking out that very topic not that long ago. Great information on the extension.umn.edu, right?
Right, that's right. And we have two or three articles that really address replacement trees, what are good trees to plant. There's even one that talks about with climate change conditions, what trees are good. So my first recommendation is diversity. I would not plant all the same kind of tree. I would plant two or three different kinds if you can. And the size really depends on you. You might want to put in some smaller trees like serviceberry. That's one of our native trees, or some of the native pagoda dogwood is another nice one. A honey locust or hackberry, the native trees. And one of my favorites, an unbelievable tree, is this St. Croix elm, which is doesn't get Dutch elm disease. It was discovered in the St. Croix River Valley. I planted one of those a few years ago, and it is huge now. It is just a really fast-growing, very beautiful tree. Mm. So, yeah, but extension.umn.edu can get a lot of ideas there for replacement trees.
Absolutely. Looking at a text, Mary, Canadian thistle has overtaken my large flower garden on the west and south side of my home. It's creeping into the lawn, has jumped to the north side of the house. I've tried so many things that I don't know what to do short of spraying it with a pesticide, which I don't want to do. Any help? I've heard that... No, it jumps. What do you think?
Mowing is just keep cutting it down and cutting it down. The Canada thistle has a subterranean root system. It is immense amount of food reserve, so it's really hard to get rid of it. If you cannot mow it, you will always have it unless you use a chemical control. So if you can mow it off repeatedly, continue to cut off the tops, this is for a couple of years, that mowing is the best thing you can do or cutting it off, but you may have to resort to a chemical control because the chemical will kill it, but you might even have to use the chemical twice or three times because that's the type of food reserve that's sitting down there with Canada thistle.
Okay. This listener sent this text, Mary. Have a lot of dill. I want to try to dry for seeds. How do I know when to pick the heads to dry them to get seeds?
Well, dill is an amazing plant that will self-seed on its own in your garden. In our community garden, it is almost a weed because there's so much of it. So the tops, they're green, and then they turn brown, and then the seed falls off. So when the seed is falling off, that's when it's ripe and ready. And if the plant is no longer green, you could almost pick it and put it upside down, and the seeds will end up falling out on its own. So I would say dill is one of the easiest things to collect seed for.
Okay. Yeah. We may have time for one or two more. Certainly this one, texture has a vinca ground cover around some pine trees in their yard, but some persistent patches of grass try to outcompete the vinca. They sprayed the undesired grasses with a product earlier in June. It worked well. Do you think it's too late to reapply that product again today?
Well, you've got to have quite a bit of grass growing there for it to uptake the herbicide. So I would say if you've got a lot of grass there, maybe it would work. The other thing you need to do is read the label because the temperature, air temperature, really affects herbicide action. And many herbicides don't like it hot. It gets too hot for them to actually function. And, of course, wind is another big consideration. So I would read the label carefully because I think that will be the best recommendation there. Danny, I forgot to mention that today the Hennepin County Master Gardeners have their houseplant extravaganza.
Oh, I'm glad you had the chance to do that. We got about half a minute.
So it's in the Eisenhower Community Center in Hopkins. The morning is classes on growing houseplants, and the afternoon at noon is the houseplant sale with like 2,000 different kinds.
Now tell us, where is it again in Hopkins?
It's at the Eisenhower Community Center in Hopkins.
Outstanding.
And the Master Gardeners from Hennepin County have a wonderful sale with houseplants. And we didn't even get a couple houseplant questions today. People
not at
are
all.
Still outside working.
Working. Glad you had the chance to bring that in there. And again, get to the Arboretum too and get on the university website, extension.umn.edu. Mary, again, it was great to see you this past week, saluting Julie Weisenhorn. And we'll talk soon.
Yes, always a pleasure to talk gardening. Thank you, Denny.
Mary Meyer from the U of M.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.